Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone, and welcome to what I know is going to be a truly unforgettable closing ceremony. My name is Claudette, and I am a compulsive debtor, and it is my absolute honor to serve as your host as we bring our 50th anniversary convention to a close. Before we begin, let's take just one moment, pause, breathe, and look at your screen. Turn the pages. There's lots of people. Whether you're joining us from North America or South America, from Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia, or anywhere else on this beautiful globe, you're here. You showed up. And together, hand in hand, we have done something remarkable this weekend. I'm quite emotional. 50 years ago, the seeds of this fellowship were planted. 50 years of recovery, 50 years of service, 50 years of love and hope carried from one person to the next. And today, those seeds have grown into something that reaches every corner of our world. This convention was not held in one city or one time zone, it was held everywhere. Simultaneously, virtually, and powerfully, because our fellowship knows no borders. From across oceans and across mountains, from different languages and different cultures, we gathered as one. To everyone joining us virtually today, you are not just a viewer, you are a participant in history. Thank you so much for being here. Now, let us move into our closing program and what a program it is. We're going to do some readings of the 12 steps. And for this, I have invited our trustee Chris, if he could read the 12 steps. And I think he needs to be given, sorry, Paul.
Thank you, Claudette. Thank you, everyone. My name's Chris. I am a compulsive debtor. The 12 steps of Debtors Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over debt, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made a direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive debtors and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. Chris is a wonderful trustee of the program, and those words never get old, the 12 steps. They remind us where we came from and who we're becoming. Next, we're going to hear a reading of the 12 traditions, the principles that keep our fellowship strong, united, and free, no matter how far we grow. To read the 12 traditions, please welcome our next trusted servant and honored trustee Jill. Please go ahead, Jill.
Hello. Well, I'm Jill. I'm a debtor. And the 12 traditions of DA. The 12 traditions begin with the idea of DA unity, and it is this principle which is one of the surest guides to a proper attitude in service. The traditions to help us to put into practice the principles we have learned from the steps and enable us to live in harmony with our fellows. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on DA unity. Two, for our group purpose, There is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for DA membership is a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or DA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, it to carry its message to the debtor who still suffers. 6. A DA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the DA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every DA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Debtors Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centres may employ special workers. 9. DA as such ought never be organised, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Debtors Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the DA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and all other public media. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation for all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Jill. Thank you for reading the traditions which bind us together. They are the guardrails that keep our ship on course across every ocean in every era. Before we get to our keynote speakers, a bit of logistic, my fault, Paul. At the end, we're going to be saying the Serenity Prayer in several languages. I am going to ask the people I've asked to read to put their hands up so that they can be given the capability of doing that. So there is Ivan, Maureen, thank you. Angeliki, thank you. Kusuki, Alexi. There we go. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay. Now we're in the closing lane, and it's time to honor. I'm greatly honored by the following speaker. It's time for our first keynote address of this closing ceremony. Our speaker has walked this path with honesty, courage, and an unwavering commitment to service. Their message has touched the hearts of many, and I have no doubt it'll touch yours today. I'm very pleased to get to know him more and more as he's on the board with us, and I consider him a friend. So please, on this closing of our 50th anniversary, it's my great privilege and deep honor to welcome to the stage Rich. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Claudette. Hi, everybody. My name's Rich. I'm a debtor. And after that, I can say I used to be humble, but Claudette has the ability to touch my heart, as so many of you do. And coming in here, see that I was going to be speaking about gratitude, and knowing Claudette was going to be here and so many of you others that I know and love, it always puts me into my emotions and I start crying. Because the gifts this program has given me are just beyond my imagination. You know, I have a passion for Debtors Anonymous, because Debtors Anonymous, you know, I'm in DA, but I'm also in a half dozen other 12-step programs, but DA is my home. DA is where I belong, where I relate. And, you know, I was raised to be perfect. And so being raised to be perfect, raised to be a liar. And so I was going along and I became perfect because I learned that I should be ashamed of who I was. And so I had to put this wall up. And I kept me separated from everyone else. And I couldn't figure out why. And I was going along and I was getting straight A's in math, but I couldn't balance my checkbook. And I didn't know why. And I went along trying to find out how to make my life work because I was supposed to be somebody and I kept ending up a nobody and I didn't know why. Well, around 1981, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous and needed to get sober. I've been sober since then. And in that program, I met a man named Donald A., and he was the first chair of the Debtors Anonymous General Service. And Donald came down and started the first meeting of Debtors Anonymous in Washington, D.C., where I was at the time. And at that time, 1983, there were five, six, seven meetings in existence in the entire world. And in our meeting in Washington, we didn't have any sponsors, we didn't have literature, we didn't have long-term experience, we didn't have anything, but we did have the idea for a spending plan. And apparently that came from Gamblers Anonymous. And so I was able to record my numbers, and I had my first PRG, or pressure group, they were called then. And I had that in the January of 1984. And I got my spending plan, and I said, this is the answer. And I worked that spending plan, and I paid off my debts, and I ended up moving back to California solvently. And I got a condo overlooking the treetops of Beverly Hills, and I got a personal luxury car, and valet parking, and a doorman, and all this stuff. And I also still had a great big hole in my gut. And I found out that money, property, and prestige just don't solve it. Where was my recovery going to be? And I'd go into meetings of Debtors Anonymous, and I'd hear, I can't pay the bills. The creditors are calling. I need more money. And I thought, I can't relate. What do I do? And I'd go to more meetings. I'd be of service all over the place. And I'd hear, I can't pay the bills. The creditors are calling. I need more money. And I thought, where is recovery for me? What fills that hole in my gut? Because I knew that the Fellowship of Debtors Anonymous was my home. I knew you were my people. I knew this is where I related. This is where I belonged. But I didn't have a solution. And so in 1993, I decided to leave Debtors Anonymous for a variety of reasons. And that was the main one. And so I left, and what I did is I said, you know what? I'm going to find happy, joyous, and free. I'm going to find the promises, and I don't care what the hell I have to do. And I went to other 12-step programs. I entered therapy. I read recovery books, workbook books. I didn't care, conference approved, not conference approved. I wanted some solution. And along the way, I learned and I grew a little at a time. But it's really hard to grow and change when you're acting perfect all the time and always saying everything's fine because people don't confront you. But I finally ended up working this program, working the steps, and working on getting honest and being okay with who I was, understanding that I didn't have to be ashamed of who I was. I didn't have to be embarrassed by being human. And I went through all these different modalities trying to solve my solution, find a solution for that hole in my gut. And slowly it started filling. And I'd drop in every once in a while. I'd come into a DA meeting and I'd hear, I can't pay the bills. The creditors are calling. I need more money. And I'm going like, where is long-term recovery in Debtors Anonymous? Where is recovery after solvency? Because for me, solvency wasn't money, property, and prestige. It was filling that hole in my heart. And I knew Debtors Anonymous would have the answer because this is where I related. This is where I belonged. I mean, I went to a lot of different 12-step programs, and I always came back to DA. And I thought, where do I go? Where do I go? And so along the way, I started healing, and I got together with people, and I would have work groups of people of other 12-step programs. We'd come together and work workbooks. We just healed any way we could. And kept moving forward. And after, I was out of DA for 20 some odd years. And I'll tell you, it was a rough road. And one of my passions for service in DA is I don't want any of you to face that. And I know there is an answer, there is a solution, and it is in this program. Along the way, on my first pressure group we had, they had a thing called a wish list that we had. And they made me write a list of everything that made my life whole and complete, everything that I believed would fill that hole in my gut. And then they told me I had to research every one of those items. Want a new car? Make, model, color, options, price, all that stuff. And then I got to prioritize them. And then, around the same time, I also went to a visions meeting around 1987, 88 in Hollywood. And I went into the visions meeting, and they're saying, my vision is to be a producer, director, and actor. And I'm thinking, like, I got to have a label I put on myself because everything sounded good to me. And so I got frustrated. And I finally ran into a man who said, the result of working the 12-step program is you'd be living a life of love and service. And I said, I can make that my vision for now. So my vision is to live a life of love and service. And that remains my vision to this day because it eliminates nothing and fills me with love. So anyway, the balance between the wish list and my vision. I come back into DA and I hear, in when the pandemic started, I'm down in Mexico. We don't have many meetings down here. I just started one in my local area a couple months ago. And so I called in on Zoom when the Zoom started. And I'd hear people saying, I can't pay the bills. The creditors are calling. I need more money. And then I heard one person say, and my vision is. And I said, maybe this is where the things will fill my hole in my heart. And so I went to more meetings, and eventually I'd hear, eventually someone would share, and my vision is. And I thought, maybe this is where DA long-term recovery comes in, recovery after solvency, filling my heart. And one of the things I looked at is they started having visions boards. And I looked at visions boards and visions, and I thought, you know what, the wish list and the visions, that's about the same thing. And so I look at that wish list and I go, okay. The top items in my priorities can go on a visions board to give you that visual motivation. And so I was going along with this and that was working fine. And then one day it dawned on me, I was trying to work the 11th step. And I was saying, what is God's will for me? How do I know God's will for me? He doesn't send emails, doesn't write letters. How do I know God's will for me? And then it dawned on me, maybe it's the desires of my heart that I put on my wish list that end up on my visions board that I work toward. And I thought, you know what? As I work towards my visions and my wishes, I hit barriers, speed bumps. And those are the lessons of the things I need to learn so I can become more of who I'm meant to be and less of who I was. And so I become dedicated to the idea that maybe life after solvency can include visions and dreams and wishes and the hopes and desires of our hearts. And sometimes I get a desire of my heart that leads me towards a lesson. And when the lesson's complete, the desire of my heart changes. I've come to understand that my higher power is guiding me minutely in every step. And I see I have 10 minutes left, Paul. I'm watching the clock too. Thanks. Along the way, there are two stories I like to tell. And one is, I was living in Southern California, Huntington Beach. And the house I was in was appraised at $1.2 million. Two blocks from the ocean in Southern California, living well. And my partner and I were paying, everything was good. And in 2007-8, the housing market collapsed and we ended up $250,000 upside down. And I was trapped. Because if I sold the house, I'd have to pay the balance. And I didn't have that kind of money. And so I was going along saying, okay, my partner, I could pay the mortgage, and we were doing it. And then my partner got really sick and had to quit working. And without that income, I couldn't afford the house and our living expenses. And I thought, what the hell am I going to do? And I thought, oh my God, my pride, I'm perfect. What do I do? I had to call the lender. I said, can I get a modification? I said, sure, yeah. We'll do it for you. And I thought, oh my God, God loves me. I'm so wonderful. And it was just like, I'm just walking on cloud nine. And then a couple of weeks passed and the fear set in. And I started to get wrapped around the ass. And I finally called the lender again and got up the courage. And I called and they said, oh no, we're just behind. Don't worry about it. And again, God loved me. A couple of weeks later, I start getting into fear again. And I started bouncing back and forth with the lender, and I'd go from fear to faith to fear to faith. But one thing was happening during that process. Every time it happened, my faith got bigger, my fear got smaller. And eventually, I was in that $1.2 million house, two blocks from the ocean in Southern California, and we were not paying mortgage, taxes, or insurance. And we were there for over 8 years. And I'll tell you, at the end of the 8 years, I had no doubt that my higher power was involved in my wallet, was involved in every aspect of my life. And I turned it over. And then a series of events happened after that, and I ended up living in Mexico, moved down here 10 years ago. And I was able to afford living well in Mexico. And I've been here for quite a while. And, one of the things on my vision board is I was telling friends, it started out my wish list. Started out, I had everything from wooden coat hangers to a trip to Paris. And I looked and, I had wooden coat hangers, five, 10 bucks. I was able to do that. And so that was crossed off. And I just said, Paris, maybe one day, whatever. And then for my birthday about 2 years ago, a good friend of mine gave me a round trip ticket to Paris. I thought, holy crap, I'm going to Paris. And so I went and I started thinking about planning my trip. And I said, I'm going to get there January 1st. I want to do New Year's in Paris. And so I booked a flight and I was all set. And I started going to the Paris DA English speaking meetings. And they said, we're having a potluck of all the DA English speaking Paris people. And it's on December 29th. You can imagine the four-letter word that came out of my mouth with that one. And so I said, oh my God, I have to solve this. I have to find another flight. I have to change it. I. And I got on trying to change it, and I couldn't find a change flight that worked within the financial parameters I put down. And I got wrapped around the axle. I tried this, I tried that, I tried everything, and I couldn't find it. And I said, okay, God, I give up. You want me to go to Paris on the first? I go to Paris on the first. And I stood up, walked away, and I said, I got to calm down. Let go. And I got. I sat down, pushed a button, and up popped a flight. It was $350. It arrived on the 27th. And I got the ticket, and I got to go to the potluck. Well, the next thing I had to do was find where am I going to stay? And the flyer for the potluck had an address, some street in Paris, and I don't know Paris. And so I said, okay, I looked up the street. It's in this neighborhood called Montmartre. And I thought, oh, okay, I know the neighborhood. I'm going to find an Airbnb there. And I had set aside $2,400 for a month at an Airbnb in Paris. And in Montmartre, they were all around $3,000. And I couldn't find one in the price range. And I found one over here that but I didn't know the neighborhood. I got into fear and I got wrapped around the axle. And I kept looking and searching and trying. And I got so wrapped around the axle that I finally gave up. And I said, God, you put me where you want me to be. And I had to go away, calm down. And I said, God, it's up to you. I came back and pushed a button, and up popped a place for $2,350 right in the middle of Montmartre. And so I said, great, I got a place. And Airbnb does not give you the address until you send them the money. And so I sent them the money, and they sent me the address. Not only was it on the same street as the potluck, it was in the same damn building. I was on the fifth floor. The potluck was on the first floor. Again, you can't tell me God is not intimately involved in every aspect of my life. And so I go through my life knowing that my God's in charge. And sometimes I decide to get in charge. I'm human. I still, my character defects come back and I get hit with. Recently, I don't drive at night down here because it's kind of scary. But the last couple of months, I've been honked at twice and I deserved it both times. And I said, it's time to give up driving. I'm 71 and it costs like $4 in a taxi to go downtown and I don't hardly ever. So why not? So I'm selling the car because I just don't want that. And I'm selling the car and I'm going forward on my adventure. And I've decided, you know what? I'm going to leave Mexico and I'm going to go to Paris. Tara, watch out. I'm going to come see them. Yeah. Because you know what? God has made my life an adventure. I have come to understand that, you know what? When I end my life, I want my life to be a book that I would want to read. I want my life to be interesting. I want it to be full of adventure. I want it to be full of drama and trauma and everything else that makes my life so rich. And I can do that and enjoy the crap that comes into my life because I know that my higher power is in charge, and no matter what, I'm going to be okay. And I know every one of you has a higher power, and I choose to believe that every one of you is absolutely going to be okay. Because to me, this is a spiritual program with a spiritual solution. And I know my money is spiritual. I used to cram money in my pocket, crumple it up, and now. Put the bills in order in my wallet because I realized that If I don't respect my money, why would it respect me? And today, I have the belief that when God wants my attention, he's going to empty my checkbook. And he's got my attention 24/7. Oh my God, I'm almost out of money. What do I do? Do I have to work a step? Maybe clean the house? I don't know, but I take action because this program is about action. And it's action with spirituality so I can grow and change and become more of who I'm meant to be and less of who I was. And I am so grateful to this program. And I'm grateful for each one of you because when I come into these rooms, whether your camera's on or off, I choose to see people that are on the path of recovery. I choose to see debtors who I consider really special in a special program. Going forward, I mean, this is the only program I know of that has pressure relief groups and visions meetings. I mean, we got the pressure group from Gamblers Anonymous, but theirs is a little different than where ours has evolved. And we have the tools here. One of the gifts of my recovery is I was able to go back to school. One of the things I studied was teams. And I just studied that teams always outperform individuals. And what's a pressure relief group but a team? What's a sharing in a meeting but a team? I have people that support me in the adventure of my life. Good, bad, and indifferent. And when that pile of crap lands on my head called daily life, of course, the first thing I say is, why me? I'm wonderful, and this shouldn't happen, and I get irritated. But then I work one, two, three. First step, acceptance. Second step, maybe God can help me. Third step, God help me, and there appears the shovel. And I start digging out of that pile of crap and want to get out of it. I have a responsibility to myself to turn around and look at what I left behind and say, is there anything I can do a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on? 4, 5, 6, 7 on? Is there anything here that I can use to grow and change and become more of who I meant to be and less of who I was? And that is the gift I've gotten out of Debtors Anonymous. And the gratitude I have for this program, for each one of you. With your cameras on or off, it doesn't matter because you know what? You reinforce to me that this is a program of recovery and we're all moving forward a day at a time. Developing the life that's going to turn into the story of a book that we're going to want to read. Make your life interesting. Make your life an adventure and know that your God's in charge. Keep coming back. And I'll tell you this, it will get better no matter what. And one promise I forgot to throw in was made to me in my first meeting, and I want to pass that on to you. Man promised me that if you work this program just to the best of your ability, nobody ever does it perfectly, but if you work this program to the best of your ability, you'll never have to feel the way you felt that first day ever again, and you'll be able to walk with dignity down any street in the world. And that has come true. And I've seen it come true for so many others. I am now 10 years solvent again for the second time. I was 10 years solvent back in the 80s. And I absolutely love this program. And I absolutely love going forward with each one of you on the adventure of our lives. Because your lives are exciting, and I love hearing the adventure that happens. That's enough out of me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Rich. My goodness, that was a great share. On behalf of everyone gathered here from around the world, thank you. Thank you for your honesty and your strength and the gift of your story. We're so grateful you're here. Merci beaucoup. We have one more extraordinary voice to hear from today. Someone whose journey is a testament to the power of this program and the grace that comes when we surrender and do the work. It's with tremendous joy and admiration that I now introduce our second keynote speaker for the closing ceremony. Please welcome Taro. Bienvenue.
Merci. Hi, everyone. I'm Terrell. I'm a recovering compulsive debtor, and I'm going to start with the Serenity Prayer. And feel free to join me. I know everyone's muted, but feel free to join. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. God, please help me to be of maximum service. Amen. I've heard it said that gratitude is the memory of the heart, and I am just deeply grateful for Debtors Anonymous and for all of us who walk this path and that we do it together. I'll be celebrating 30 years of the September 11th since I came into DA, and I'm a different person than I was when I got here. When I came into DA, I had food insecurity. I had over $20,000 in debt. I was suffering terribly. I couldn't sleep over my money issues. And my pattern was to be bulimic around my earning and spending. So I was self-employed, and I would go through periods where I didn't earn. And then I would get a really big project and a lot of money would come in, and I would have to evacuate the money as quickly as possible. I could not hold, I was not a safe container for the energy of money. But the problem was, is that when I went into this spending cycle after I had earned, because I couldn't bear having money in my account, I spent more than I took in, and that was how I got into debt. So I was in this cycle. And when I came to my first DA meeting, I didn't have the 25 cents for the pamphlets. That's what pamphlets were back in 1996. And a friend of mine bought me a pamphlet very kindly. And I just started doing what I was told. And my splash into recovery was a broad stroke. I entered into four 12-step programs in a 7-week period. And the money issues were connected to everything. They were just like this thread that wove through all of it. So I had no idea which end was up. And I took direction. So people kept telling me what to do. The first sponsor that I worked with told me to start doing service immediately. There was a World Service Conference, and I was told to help, and I did. And I've done and loved service ever since. So I'm going to read Tradition 3. The only requirement for DA membership is a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt. When I came in, what I heard over and over was cut up your credit cards, call the company, and cancel them. And I did. And I remember the yelp that came up out of me as I cut my credit cards up. I had no idea the power of this umbilical cord, this concept that I had, that a fund of money that did not belong to me and to which I had no moral right, that I would have access to that. I had no idea how that funded so much of my malaise, because that is my spiritual malady. I would take things into my possession which I did not own. The bank owned them. The credit card company owned them, not me. And so I worked the program. I worked the steps. I did everything I could. And I promise I'm not cross-talking with the previous speaker, Cher. It's just that he used phrases that I actually myself use about my recovery. So I didn't care where the solution came from. I pulled it in. I did it all, anything and everything, and I did DA with all my heart. So I got to a point where I got out of debt, and I had made a commitment to not incur any unsecured debt. And what I would like to say about that is, my first sponsor would always say, There's the good reason and there's the real reason. So there's always a good reason to debt because I'm the queen of situational ethics. I could pitch anything to anybody and make it sound completely plausible and like it's the only option. What I discovered is that there's always another way. Whatever it is that I need to do, there is a way to do it without using a credit card or incurring unsecured debt. There absolutely is always another way. And as a result of that commitment, I started growing in unsuspected ways because I had to stretch in order to keep my commitment to my solvency. So I got to this place where it wasn't about cleaning up the wreckage of my past anymore. It was about how am I going to be the person my higher power designed me to be? And that led me to vision work. And there's just not enough to say about how amazing that process is. So, I want to apologize for my camera needing to be off. I have the sense that it should be on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it on. And if my signal gets wonky, Paul, maybe you could wave at me and I'll just turn my camera off again. So I have had a vision since I was a preteen of living in Paris. And people in DA, because I was living in Seattle, and in the Seattle meetings, everybody knew what my vision was because we would go around the room and say our visions. And it was always, my vision is I'm living in Paris. My vision is I have a maroon passport. This went on, I don't know, 20-ish years or something crazy. So I started doing PRGs. My husband came into DA about 15 years ago, and then we started doing PRGs together. And then there was a whole confluence of events that led us to move to Paris in 2018. And so I took a few notes about my experience with vision work. So I'm just gonna look at what I wrote here. So Mike, this is my experience. My higher pl power plants a vision in my heart, and it's an invitation. It's, you know, here's the vision should you choose to take it, sort of a deal. I don't have to, but it's a guarantee that if I do, I am going to grow. And when I moved to Paris, I thought it was all about moving to Paris. Like, I thought that's what the vision was. And what I didn't know is that what the vision was that me becoming the person who would have the experience of living here. And I have to tell you, without DA, I don't know that I could have done all the paperwork, which I did on my own, to get into the system, to start a business here, to fill in the blank, to integrating into a new culture. And as a result of all of those things that I've done in order to live my vision, oh, I see you waving. I'm turning my camera off. As a result of doing all these things to have this vision of living in Paris, I've changed. I've grown. I've matured. I believe I'm a more interesting person than I was 8 years ago because I've stretched. So, for me, the miracle in my life today of Debtors Anonymous is about the fulfillment of potential. When I first got here, it was the miracle of learning how to not debt and not be in the pain of being indebted to someone. And now it's all about potential and fulfillment. So there's a particular heartbreak that goes along with the longing of having a vision, of having this vision of an evolved version of myself. So someone taught me a prayer when I was in Seattle. It was during a PRG about moving to France. And I still have that little slip of paper. It's in my God box. And it says, "Higher power, I feel called to live in Paris. What would you have me do?" And I said that prayer over and over and over. I actually still say it because I'm still called to live here. I love it so much. So let's see, what else do I want to say about that? When I start listening to the longing in my heart, my higher power detoxes me. Because in order to have a vision, I have to change. And one of the things that I've heard in French DA is if I want different results, I have to take different actions. And that's part of the mandate for having a vision. So when I'm actively engaged with my vision, I become a fulcrum point of two extremes. On one side, there's the struggle to give myself permission to do the thing that makes absolutely no sense and seems utterly impossible. And on the other side is the synchronicity of opportunities that start to happen where things fall in place. So there's the, it can't happen on one side, and it's unbelievable how this is unrolling on the other side. And I'm in the middle of this miracle. When I hold a vision in my heart, I think of it as a version of step five. I admit to God, to myself, and another human being the exact nature of my heart's desire. And I can't do this work alone. I mean, it's really strangers have helped me. My loved ones in recovery have helped me. I mean, fill in the blank. I have gotten so much help. So when I moved to Paris in 2018, there was French-speaking DA, but there was no English-speaking DA. And not long after I got here, a newcomer asked me out to coffee and said, "I don't speak French. You have to start English-speaking DA because my deading is killing me and I can't understand what's being said in the French meetings." So four of us did. Zara, Emily B, and Anna V, we started an in-person English-speaking meeting. And then we were sort of rolling along, I think, for maybe a year with in-person meetings, which became very well attended because we were cross-pollinating with other 12-step fellowships in Paris that were English-speaking. And then the pandemic hit. And of course, none of us knew what to do. So I called my friend Adam in Seattle and said, "Would you help us? We don't know what to do. We can't meet in person. The restrictions in France were very severe and they were swift." And he got us set up with Zoom, which then led me to be able to help other fellowships in Paris get set up on Zoom. And the English-speaking Debtors Anonymous didn't miss a beat. We did not miss one meeting. From the day that the city was shut down to the next day when the meeting met, we were on Zoom, or to the next week when the meeting met, we were on Zoom, and it's been going ever since. And there's now two meetings, which you're all warmly invited to attend, one on Monday, DA, and on Thursday, BDA. So let's see, what else can I say? I see the time. I've come to the conclusion that this longing to be a more evolved version of myself. I totally lost my train of thought just now. Oh, it's as if my future is talking to me. It's like, come this way, you're going to be happy. And I'm going to try to turn my video on one more time. And my experience with living in Paris is that I am the woman that I always dreamt I would be, and I am the happiest I have ever been in my entire existence. I'm like a duck in water here. I love it so much. And then as my experience happens, is visions then make new visions. And I had another vision, which was also lifelong, which was to be a French citizen. And I just wasn't ready to do that when I first got here. And one has to be here for 5 years. So the minute I hit the 5 year mark, I started the paperwork, which took 2 years. And again, what I learned in DA and what I learned in PRGs, because believe me, I had PRGs about it, the paperwork was just extraordinary. And I didn't think I could do it, but I got a lot of support again from strangers and from loved ones. And it was amazing. It was a magical experience. And this is my maroon passport. So I became a French citizen in October. And I'm just thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. So I don't know. I have 3 minutes left, but I'm bummed that I can't hear all of you share, and I wish I could give you my time, but this is how I'm going to wrap up. So sometimes prayers come to me, often, and I'll wake up in the middle of the night and this prayer will bubble up. And this one has come to me, and I say it all the time. I say it especially on the metro. I pray for I'm on the metro, the doors to the train open. A bunch of people come in. I close my eyes. I say the prayer. The metro gets to the next stop. The doors open. People go out. People come in. And I say it for the next batch of people. And now I'm going to say this for all of us. May you love deeply and be loved deeply. May you prosper and know abundance. May you be in vibrant good health. And may you walk the earth lightly, knowing that you have been of service. God bless DA and God bless us all.
Oh, thank you, Terrell. That's so beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you from the bottom of all our hearts. You've blessed us today in ways that will carry forward long after this screen goes dark. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, as I prepare to close this ceremony and with it our 50th anniversary convention, I want to take one more moment to honor what we've done together. We came from different cities, different countries, different time zones, and different mother tongues. Some of you woke up in the dark to be here. Some of you stayed up late. Some of you snuck away on your lunch break. We see you, but we were all here, hand in hand, virtually, yet truly together. 50 years of this fellowship, 50 years of people choosing recovery, 50 years of passing the torch, telling the truth, and never giving up. And this weekend, we honored every single one of those years. Take what you've heard this weekend, take it home, whether home is across the street or across the world. Carry it with you, share it, and live it. Because that is how we keep this fellowship alive for the next 50 years. Before we formally adjourn, let us close as we always do together in unity. Wherever you are in the world right now, whether you are alone in a room or surrounded by loved ones, please join us. Let us bow our heads or simply be still and close with the serenity prayer, which we're going to say in different languages. I'm going to start by inviting Ivan, please, who will say the prayer in Spanish. Ivan, there you
Yes,
go.
I'm here. Thank you. Dios, concédenos serenidad para aceptar las cosas que no podemos cambiar, valor para cambiar aquellas que podemos y sabiduría para reconocer la diferencia. Que se haga tu voluntad y no la nuestra. Que así sea.
Thank you. Next, Maureen, who will say it in German.
Gott, gib mir die Gelassenheit, Dinge hinzunehmen, die ich nicht ändern kann, den Mut, Dinge zu ändern, die ich ändern kann, und die Weisheit, das eine vom anderen zu unterscheiden.
Thank you. Thank you. Angeliki, who will say it in Greek.
Θεέ μου, χάρισέ μου τη γαλήνη να δέχομαι τα πράγματα που δεν μπορώ να αλλάξω, το θάρρος να αλλάζω αυτά που μπορώ και τη σοφία να γνωρίζω τη διαφορά. Το δικό σου θέλημα να γίνει, όχι το δικό μου.
Thank you. Thank you, Angeliki. Kusuki in Japanese.
神様、私たちにお与えください。自分に変えられないものを受け入れる落ち着きを。変えられるものは変えていく勇気を。そして二つのものを見分ける賢さを。
Thank you so much. Alexei in Russian.
Боже, дай нам разум и душевный покой принять то, что мы не в силах изменить. Мужество изменить то, что мы можем, и мудрость отличить одно от другого. Аминь.
Amen. Thank you. And I will say it in French. Dieu, donnez-nous la sérénité d'accepter les choses que l'on peut changer, le courage de changer les choses que l'on peut et la sagesse d'en connaître la différence. Amen. And now I'd like it if we could all unmute and say it together in English. You can all unmute yourselves.
Not
Oh, sorry.
You are worth it.
On behalf of the entire planning committee, our board of trustees, our readers, our keynote speakers, Rich and Terrell, and every single person who made this global gathering possible, thank you so much. I'd like to make a shout out, please, to our steering committee that worked so hard at putting this together, and that would be, please put your hands up, Bliss, Roger, Phil, Rich. Thank you so much for everything you've done. We're going to see all of you hand in hand at the next one. The convention is now officially closed.